Imagine your partner walks in the door looking defeated. Do you notice right away or do you barely look up? And if you do notice, do you know exactly what to say or what to do to lift them up, to make them feel safe, and to help to turn things around for them? If that sounds like a superpower, well, it actually kind of is. And it's what secure couples do every day. But how do they do that? That is what we're diving into today here on Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Master Your Marriage. This is part five in our Secure Relationship series, and we're so excited to have you here with us today. This has been such a great series so far, and the feedback has actually been really kind of cool to hear. And putting it together every week has really been good for us and our relationship as well.
I agree.
Because as we prepare and as we talk over these topics, it really prompted a lot of the same questions and conversations that we ask you to do, and it's enabled us to make our own couple bubble even stronger. And that's something we love about doing this podcast together. It's a way for us, as we're teaching you, to just remind ourselves of the things that can strengthen and make our relationship even stronger.
Yeah, I think it's so awesome that we get to do this together. Now, if you're new to the series, I would suggest you definitely go back and listen to the whole thing. Like Robert said, this is episode five of this series, but the whole thing has been so good. Each episode, we've dropped important nuggets that you really don't want to miss to help you to develop a secure functioning relationship. But even if this is your first episode in the series, or even if this is your very first episode listening to our podcast, first of all, welcome. But no worries. Actually, today's topic is something that sort of stands strong on its own. You don't really have to have listened to all of the previous episodes for this one. However, those previous episodes are really too good to miss. So go back and listen to them. But today we're going to be exploring how to keep each other safe through soothing and through uplifting. And we're talking about this today because this whole series has been about how to build a strong bubble, a relationship bubble of safety and security, and to how to build this bubble around your relationship.
So it's going to seem interesting, and we're going to talk about soothing and uplifting. And again, we're going to draw from the work of Dr. John Gottman and Dr. Stan Tatkin. Dr. Tatkin's book, Wired for Love, is a good one to read. And it's a great companion that goes along with this entire series. One of the things that Dr. Tatkin mentions is that secure couples have this incredible ability to spot and even to just intuit when their partner feels bad. And they know just the right thing to do to soothe them, to uplift them. It's like they're tuned in to one another's emotional frequency, and they know how to use their own body, their own nervous system to regulate and uplift their partner's nervous system and their overall mood. There are many ways to do that, but it might include shifting their own breath, adjusting the tone of their voice. I think that's a big one. It could be just knowing the right words to say at just the right moment, or it could be the way that they give a hug or the way that even the hug is offered. And it can be almost any nonverbal thing that soothes the other person. This ability comes from having a well-functioning prefrontal cortex and a well-balanced left and right brain. And these parts of the brain help us stay empathetic and have the presence and awareness to notice these subtle shifts in our partners.
So that we can do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we all have things that make us feel especially bad,
ooh,
don't we?
Yeah.
We all have things that can trigger a big reaction. And often these things really come from our past experiences in childhood or in early relationships. And if we're being honest, we all come with trigger buttons, don't we? It's part of our, what we call baggage. And when we partner with another person, we are partnering with all of their trigger buttons as well. Their hurts, their past injustices. What was it you said one time we were being hosted on another podcast, and you said, what would it really be like if we were honest with each other and we were doing our vows? Do you, Robert,
yeah,
take Sharla with all of her fears of rejection and her fears of humiliation? And do you, Sharla, take Robert
with his abandonment, and you promise to support him and not jump up and down on his buttons to trigger him? It would be interesting if those vows really kind of created this type of honesty.
If we understood that up front. Yeah. But in truth, in secure relationships, we do accept this in each other as the whole and complete package. And not only that, we truly should see each other as in our care, which means we also accept responsibility for caring for each other's baggage. I don't know, you know, early on, I would have ever really thought of that way, that it was my responsibility to take care of your baggage. But that's it, isn't it? We accept that we are in a relationship with another flawed human being who has vulnerabilities, who has sensitivities, who has triggers. And this responsibility that we have to care for the other person's baggage is not something to take lightly. It's a big job to take someone into our care, but that's exactly what makes this couple bubble that we've been talking about, this bubble, a place that we want to be, not just a place that we have to be. So couples who see themselves in each other's care have this amazing ability, a superpower, if you will, to be able to enrich and uplift and to regulate each other's moods and energy.
I just love that analogy of baggage and triggers. And I will say that triggers and baggage could probably be interchangeable when we talk about them. But I always think of it like when you come home from vacation. Well, when you move in together, let's assume that, you know, you decided to partner with someone else and they brought 7 large suitcases and you brought 7 large suitcases and you sort of half unpacked, but you left your suitcases all over the room in the house. And as you're walking around at night, you're constantly tripping over this baggage. And even though you know it's there, you're like, oh, I'm supposed to turn the corner and there's this button there that I'm not supposed to jump on. Sometimes I just trip on it or I'm surprised by it. But as we learn more about each other and their triggers, then we can take care of that baggage.
Maybe we
can try putting it away. And I think maybe my metaphor for putting your baggage away is just learning about it, learning about it so you don't trip over it. So as we talk about triggers are what we might call issues, right? And these are things that we all carry with us. Now, how many triggers or issues do you think we all carry with us? Is it numbered in the dozens, maybe hundreds? Actually, not. Dr. Stan Tatkin points out that people generally have about 2 to 3 triggers that tend to resurface again and again. And the Gottmans call these our enduring vulnerabilities because they just tend to endure throughout our lives. We can manage them, but they still just tend to show up. They really are echoes from the past that still haunt us. They pop up from time to time, usually not at a great time.
Mm-hmm.
A person once neglected as a child may deal with a lifetime fear of being abandoned. Another example might be a person who grew up with an intrusive parent who now deals with intense feelings of shame. The reason why this is important is because when you begin to understand each other's enduring vulnerabilities, you can also learn unique ways to help soothe them and heal them from these vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. I think it takes the compassion part.
It does. Yeah. It does. And grace and love and
I love the
patience.
Grace part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Because grace is when we are extending that compassion, sometimes when it's not so much deserved, but we do it anyway.
Yeah.
So let me share one quick way that we use this in our coaching practice. Oftentimes, couples will come to us after they've had a really big fight.
A blowout.
And Gottmans call that a regrettable incident. And they have a process for processing that regrettable incident. And it's a 5-step process. It usually takes about an hour to do. We usually do that in a coaching session. But in one of those 5 steps, we identify what it was specifically that set them up. What triggered this really big reaction or this really big response in usually one or both of the partners?
And the way that we do this is by first having the couple list all the feelings that they felt when they had this big reaction. And oftentimes, they're not really good at it.
They don't know
what the feelings are. So we'll give them a list of different types of feelings, like shame and anger and fear, to help them identify what they're feeling. And then we ask them sort of rewind in your memory to a time in the past, usually it's in your childhood, where you had a similar set of feelings. And then they share these stories from their past so they both can understand why this recent event was such a big blow up, why it was out of proportion, why it was such a big trigger. This step helps each of them see one another's enduring vulnerabilities so that they can be more sensitive to one another maybe the next time that comes up, or maybe to help them avoid those triggers as well in the future moving forward.
To avoid them, but also to notice them when they are early happening so that they can actually again, take responsibility and help them to soothe them. I think that's so important to realize, like, we have so much power to be able to soothe each other when we're getting triggered.
Yeah. Yeah. So, especially if we take time to identify it, right?
Yeah. So actually, speaking of that, we are going to help you to identify some of your own enduring vulnerabilities today and your partner's. And we're going to help you look at your partner's vulnerabilities, hopefully in a little bit different way today. It's probably going to be wise to start with yourself first. So we're going to invite
Isn't it easier to diagnose your partner's triggers?
Always. Always. That's why you need to start with yourself.
Because
right?
I don't have to look in the mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's how we're going to suggest that you do this exercise. Sit down and think about several incidents that you've had in the past with your spouse that deeply affected you and maybe really got under your skin, where you had a big reaction. Perhaps it was a time when you got super angry or really depressed or lonely, or you felt rejected. And these should be specific incidents that you remember during the course of your relationship, not just general concepts or general ideas.
And then write down as many of these as you can think of. Write down the feelings that accompanied each of these incidents, and then look for the patterns. What are the commonalities here? Think about your early history of your childhood and ask yourself, is there another story that you remember that relates to what got you triggered or what caused these feelings in that incident?
So I think it'll help if I share a personal example here. And I'm going to let you in on some of my own enduring vulnerabilities. You'll probably pick up what those are. And this was something that happened between Robert and I 8, 9, 10 years ago. So it's been a little while. And Robert was installing a swing on our back porch that was actually my idea. I really wanted it. And he was doing a really kind thing to install this swing for me that I really wanted. However, it led to a very big reaction in me. So as he was installing this swing, that was a lot of work, I started to worry that the porch wasn't going to hold, that our structure of our porch wasn't going to hold the swing if a couple people were on it, because I had heard creaking and cracking and crackling from the roof or whatever. And so I started imagining, catastrophizing really, our entire porch falling down because it wasn't strong enough to hold us up. And so I asked Robert, after doing all of this work, if he really thought it was going to be safe for us to use this swing, because I was starting to think maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. Of course, this was after he put in a couple hours of work. Now, I don't remember exactly what Robert said in response, but I can tell you that it, whatever it was, immediately made me see red. I was feeling mocked and I felt teased. I felt made fun of. I felt bullied. I felt stupid. Those are the feelings. Like when we talked to you about thinking of those incidents and then thinking of those feelings, those are the feelings that I was feeling. I felt stupid. And then our kids came out and they kind of started to laugh at me as well, because they're like, you know, mom's being silly about this. So they started laughing at me. And now I was feeling like everybody was ganging up on me. I felt more stupid. I felt now enraged. And the funny thing about this whole story is it wasn't so much what the kids did. It wasn't so much what even Robert said. It was an echo. Remember, we said our triggers are echoes from the past. They're a vulnerability from long ago that shows up in the moment, like Robert said, when you're least expecting it, when you really don't want to see it.
Yep.
And so that for me, as I look back at that, I believe that was an old rejection wound, rejection or humiliation. These types of things, rejection things, are something that I'm very sensitive to.
Yeah, I mean, let's not let Robert off the hook here.
No.
Because I didn't handle that well either.
Right.
And I didn't do what I should have done, which was notice that you were getting triggered.
Yeah.
And I didn't modulate that.
Right.
And also, not to give the kids any credit, but the minute they heard me questioning, they wanted to get on the swing. They're like, Mom, we're on the swing. And next thing you know, I'm like, look, and it's fine. You were wrong. And that's not great on my side either.
Right. So it was a mess. It was a regrettable incident that we ended up processing a couple weeks later or a week later. I don't remember.
But I got to learn a lot about you.
We got to learn a lot. Yeah. And I was actually an old wound that I hadn't seen even show up for a while.
Yeah. Sometimes they just rear their ugly heads.
They do.
So we want you to think of some specific incidents that you've had like that, much like the one that Sharla mentioned, in your adult relationships, where you had a really big, out of proportion reaction. Notice what you felt and what led you to feel that vulnerable feeling. Write them all down, whatever comes to mind. And then look at your list for patterns. Like in Sharla's example, you probably noticed that your list of vulnerabilities can be boiled down to maybe 2 or 3 main issues that tend to come up time over time over time.
You want to talk about your invulnerable enduring vulnerabilities. Well, it's funny. Shared one of mine
earlier. When we talked about like the two different examples, mine is abandonment. It always has been. And even though I feel like I have a really good handle on it, still every once in a while, I'm just like, wait, who's this? What is this voice talking to me? And that just comes from when I was a kid. I recognized that it was a large problem for us in our relationship for a really, really long time. And then, you know, just when you think you have it managed, Charlotte, for her part, is always being sensitive to that. But it doesn't change the fact that still comes up from time to time.
Yeah.
Just really weird and in the strangest situations.
Yeah, exactly.
I think knowing it, naming it,
yep,
and understanding how to manage it are really important. Know it, name it, understand how to manage it.
Yes. So now here's the thing. It's important for you, as Robert said, to know it, to know your own vulnerabilities first. But it's even more important for you to know your partners. Why? So that you can be more aware of what really distresses them the most.
Yeah. And that's super important, because if you don't know it, then you're playing with fire. And then you'll just keep jumping on each other's buttons. You'll keep triggering them. Your relationship is going to be filled with these really highs, ups and downs. So until you learn about your partner's enduring vulnerabilities, you're really just setting yourself up for just this crapshoot. Okay. How do we go about learning your partner's vulnerabilities? One way is you can do the previous exercise together and then share your answers with each other. But you could also look for the pattern by yourself by running through past events where your partner had this big reaction. Think about the incidents where he or she became very distressed. And again, just brain dump as many incidents and issues as you can think of. And then notice the commonalities. Think about what issues might have made them feel so vulnerable and anxious. And what you might find is, like you, there are probably two or three things that make your partner feel really bad. Now, as a final step, perhaps you'll want to check your assumptions with your partner and have a conversation where you both share your enduring vulnerabilities with each other.
All right. So now here is how this all relates to the couple bubble. Remember, one of the principles is that our relationship is always a place of safety and security. So part of having a strong couple bubble is this promise that we have with each other that when you are in distress, I will soothe and uplift you, even if I'm the one that's causing your distress.
I really like that. And it's not simply enough to avoid sort of pushing those trigger buttons. A strong bubble means having an awareness of what antidotes will soothe your partner when they are distressed. As experts on each other, no one knows how to apply the antidotes better than you do. You might be thinking, okay, Robert, I'm not so sure how to do that. So let's talk about it.
So it might help if you start by reviewing the list of the two or three vulnerabilities that you just discovered about your partner. And for each of these vulnerabilities, try to start thinking about and identifying what antidote you might be able to use that might lessen those bad feelings. So for example, if you know your partner has this abandonment wound, like Robert just described, what things might I say? What verbal or nonverbal actions might I take that might lessen those bad feelings when they are starting to get triggered? And I actually put together a handout.
We're going to go over the handout. I think the answer to your question is in the handout.
Yeah. And so this is going to be free. It's going to be linked in the show notes.
So let's go with the first one, because we talked about abandonment.
Yep.
So I'll read the enduring vulnerability and maybe you can talk about the antidote.
Sure.
Okay. So abandonment. This would be Robert. Fear of being left alone, unloved, or often from inconsistent caregiving in childhood.
Worrying about people always leaving.
Yeah. Worrying about people always leaving. That's me.
So if your partner has a similar trigger or, you know, that echo from the past, what might be some things I can say to Robert that can soothe him if it's my responsibility to help to soothe him? It doesn't have to be a really eloquent speech. It's like you just kind of know those words. Like, I'm not going anywhere, Robert. I'm here. You're who I've always wanted.
Yeah.
Another antidote for abandonment might be just sending them a text that just says, you know, I'm missing you. I can't wait till we're back together again later.
That's cute.
So I mentioned a rejection wound, and that often forms when trust is broken from early inconsistencies in caretaking or maybe a parent who is emotionally unstable. So what would be an antidote?
So antidote idea, maybe you say, you're exactly who I choose every day. I love you just as you are. And pair it maybe with some physical contact. Right? A little hug or that way to reinforce to your acceptance.
Yeah.
So they don't feel rejected. Maybe another one is like, your feelings matter to me. And then one of my favorite questions is just tell me more so I can understand better.
Yeah.
I like that.
So all on this handout, we have lots of different antidotes for different types of, we have humiliation, overwhelm, fear of invisibility, a fear of failure, fear of losing control, betrayal. So grab the handout and look through these ideas so that you can start to think of your own antidotes that you can apply, just knowing the right thing to say or the right touch, verbal, nonverbal, when your partner is having their bad feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this might give you some ideas when you're doing that exercise as well.
So one of the things that I think as we talked about this topic in advance is I can sort of foresee people saying, why is it my job to manage your triggers? Why is it my job to make you happy? Why is it my job to soothe you? Shouldn't you manage yourself?
I've heard that before. It's not my job to make you happy.
Yeah.
You should be happy all on your own.
Yeah. You know, or that's just a lot of work. Why is it my problem? That's your problem.
I mean, there is some truth to that, that you need to be able to find your own happiness. It's not completely wrong. But in a relationship dynamic where we're paired together and we are in one another's care, then we have the responsibility to not jump up and down on one another's triggers, to not make things worse, and to be able to try and make their day better.
So how is this not codependency? Because I think that's another question people will have as they listen to this episode. Doesn't this mean that I'm really enmeshed with you, that I have to manage your triggers?
So let's talk about that head on. No, this is not codependency. Codependency originated from AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a word that describes partners of addicts who enabled and denied the addiction. In a codependent relationship, one person creates safety for the other person who actually doesn't do anything. They don't reciprocate at all. It's not mutual. What we're suggesting is, especially to build your couple bubble, is a fully mutual system where both spouses see it as their job to soothe and uplift one another. Another big difference in interdependent couples is that they can still hold each other's feet to the fire. They can hold them accountable when needed, which is why we talked about principles and guardrails last week. It really needs to be a two-way street. I can expect Charlotte to be available when I need her, especially if I need her to help me, 24/7. But in return, I must make myself available for her as well. This is mutuality, not codependency.
Exactly. All right. I want to kind of end this episode with a little game of how well do you know your spouse?
I like this game.
So this is we're going to ask you some questions and you can test your knowledge of your partner this week and practice some of these ideas on your partner, maybe without even telling them, to see how well you know your partner. But either way, you'll either make them feel really good this week or you're going to learn a lot about your spouse in the process.
I mean, I think you're going to know subconsciously a lot of these answers and it's going to be good to bring it to the forefront so that you can just practice this.
I think so too. All right. So the first question is, drawing on what you know about your partner, you are the expert in your partner, what do you think you could do right now to bring a smile to their face? Is it maybe sharing a fun memory that the two of you shared? Is it physical touch, like maybe a back rub? Is it words of appreciation? What would bring a smile to their face? And take it a step further. Go ahead and test your assumption out and see what kind of a reaction you get.
Yeah, test your theory this week. All right, number two, what sort of compliment could you give that would be meaningful and really move them? And I'm talking about something that sort of brings them close to tears or gets them a little misty-eyed. Not your lazy, like, you know, you're a great cook kind of compliment, but something a little deeper. Think about that one.
Okay. The next one is, what can you say or do that gets your partner really excited, like where their eyes widen and maybe their face flushes and you can just see that excitement all over their face? What could you do? I know what I could do.
Yeah, I'd say let's go to the Caribbean.
And one more question. What are two or three things that you can do reliably to soothe your spouse when they are distressed?
I think that might be the most important question.
Of this episode, anyway.
Yeah, of this episode. What do you know how to do to soothe your spouse reliably?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this brings us to the fifth core principle in our secure relationship series. Secure functioning couples are adept at knowing how to please and how to soothe one another.
Now, this week, we want to challenge you to identify each other's vulnerabilities, then create your antidote list of things that you can use or say to soothe your partner or to uplift your partner. And maybe this is even going to spark a conversation where you can share those lists with each other, test out those remedies that you've come up with on one another. And I think just this conversation alone that you can have is going to strengthen your bubble and going to increase and strengthen your expertise on each other. You know, it's a way to update our love maps, like we always say is so important.
I love trying to be an expert on you. Don't forget the handout. That's going to be in the show notes. That's going to give you some really good ideas. Thank you so much for listening. If this episode resonated with you, we'd love it if you'd subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and a review. That really helps more couples find out about this show. And if there's someone that you feel this episode might be beneficial to, please share that with them.
Remember to be kind to each other this week. Put each other first. It's the small things done often that create the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.